This podcast is exclusively sponsored by Equalend, a global fintech firm for the securities finance industry.
Welcome back to our final episode of Asia Securities Finance Monthly for this season. And as always, this is Matt MacArthur in Hong Kong. As you know, one of our goals for this podcast is to make it one size fits all by providing relevant APAC updates from market veterans. So today, we'll recap and kiss goodbye to 2024, and no better way to usher in 2025 than with a pillar of our APAC stock loan community, the legend himself, Jeff Coyle from Northern Trust, and one of APAC's rising stars, Andrew Yip, joining us from SocGen. And as a special holiday bonus, we have our very own data wizard, Cameron Cole from Equalend, all from right here in Hong Kong. Now, before I leak any more oil, let's hop right into this. What would you say were the major themes in the APAC securities finance market from your perspective in 2024? Now, there really is no wrong answer here, as every bank has their own client tilt or their own strategy. But Jeff, from Northern Trust's perspective, what was in play for 2024?
Thanks, Matt, and thank you for the wonderful intro. Delighted to join you here, and thanks to Pazla also for this opportunity to wrap up the year for your listeners. To your question, there are plenty of options to choose from, but if I had to pick two main themes from 2024, I would call out one, Taiwan, and two, collateral diversification. Taiwan has been a strong revenue driver once again, and the standout market from a lending perspective, and collateral diversity continues to be a key performance differentiator. If I was to throw one more into the mix, Matt, it would be the BOJ finally lifting rates, which has had an impact on the cross-currency basis spread.
Now, Andrew, from the prime broker side, can you highlight some events that have resonated for SocGen in 2024?
Sure. Nicely put, Jeff. To add, I feel there are more factors driving the markets in 2024. Firstly, the US election. The potential tariff scheme brings export earning concerns to all its trade partners across the globe, particularly Hong Kong, China, and Taiwan. In the region, with their heavy reliance on exports to the US, for example, cargo shippers gained price attractions due to the high expected contract price to the US and the Europe lines in 2025. Secondly, a series of China government policies certainly alleviated the distressed situation developers during the China Golden Week. But even if the policies rolled out, looking at the stock markets is yet to prove investors' confidence have been regained. Apart from the developer sector, we also see sector rotation around financials and utilities. Also, short demand on consumer staples and energy and healthcare as well all adds up to it. Lastly, Indian Nifty Index reached a peak in late September in 2024. There was strong demand for IPO and cross-border deals with Hyundai Motor, for example, being the largest IPO in Indian market history.
Thanks for that, Andrew. Now, Cam, from a data perspective, what were we seeing in 2024?
Sure. I'd just like to say thanks again to Pazla for having us on the podcast and to yourself, Matt, where I'm going to be campaigning internally to try and get data wizard of my business cards going forward. So thanks for that intro. I've run some data for us from January to November 2024 to probably have a look at the kind of global picture, and then we can narrow that down into a regional perspective. So globally, securities lending activity generated around $8.9 billion in revenue between January and November 2024. That's down 11% year on year. From a regional perspective, EMEA saw the steepest decline with revenues down nearly 20%, followed by North America down 11%, while securities lending activity in APAC earned $1.95 billion. So that's just down 2% year on year. Unsurprisingly, the bulk of that came from equities, where revenue remained pretty flat compared to the same period last year, with a 3% uptick in fees being offset by a 4% reduction in on-loan balances. From a sector perspective, and I think this plays into a bit of a deeper dive in trends later on in the podcast, but certainly the IT sector has been the primary driver of revenue out here, generating $605 million in revenue, fueled by surging demand for the AI-related applications and semiconductor sectors.
There are certainly some common themes there, which we'll dive into later. But I'd like to take a look at APAC equity market lending performance at a high level. What markets have been driving performance? Cam, can you kick us off?
Yeah, absolutely. The data in APAC tells two sides of a story, actually. So to Jeff's earlier point, Taiwan was certainly the proverbial jewel in APAC's crown and remains a critical focal point in region. Taiwanese equities themselves brought in just over $660 million in lending revenue from January to November 24, and solidifying its position as the leading securities lending market in region and overtaking Japan this year. From a year-on-year perspective, that looks like a 43% increase, and that's driven by a 34% increase in on-loan balances and a 6% increase in fees. If we look at a security level, the three of the top five best performing securities in region all originated from Taiwan, and specifically again within the IT industry. So Vanguard International Semiconductors, we've seen revenue up 454% year on year, earning nearly $23 million, and then Gigabyte Technologies as well, again generating $23 million January to November. Japan followed in second place, earning $604 million, largely driven by that volume and seasonal activity. Yet on the other side, we've seen Hong Kong not performing as well as expected, generating $304 million, down 7%, with on-loan balances dropping 12% year on year. And then we have Korea. So we all know of the Korean regulatory developments throughout the year, but I just thought it'd be interesting to take a look and cast our minds back to 2023, where Korea generated $331 million in lending revenue. And then understandably, since the short sale ban this year, we've seen that collapse nearly 80%, with on-loan balances declining by 60% as well.
Now, Jeff and Andrew, I can only hope you disagree with what Cam said so we can turn this into a firefight. That would be great for ratings. But Jeff, do you have any thoughts?
I'd love to put your ratings up, Matt. Hopefully we can anyway, but very hard to disagree with what Cam just said. You know, it's very much in line with what we've been seeing. Taiwan's been the strong driver of revenue, driven by AI, with the TAIEX being propelled to record levels. Japan continues to be a volumes market, providing long-term lending stability. And Australia as well, actually, has been a steady market for volumes, especially specials activity around index rebalances. For example, we saw some lithium miners stocks removed from the ASX 200 earlier this year, and also from the MSCI rebalance in November. So both of those events were driving elevated fees. But outside of AI, very hard to see any major trends that disagrees with what Cam has been seeing. On the downside, the regional disappointment, if we discount South Korea, was Hong Kong, where volumes remained low as stimulus measures aimed at lifting the Chinese economy had done little to boost market sentiment. As a result, we saw hedge funds maintain a risk-off stance and not enough concentrated demand to create conditions for specials activity. I'll caveat that with the fact that we did see an uptick in activity subsequent to the September stimulus announcements. These measures, which included mortgage rate reductions, drove the Hang Seng Index more than 30% higher over just a couple of weeks. And we did see borrow demand on the back of that sharp uptick in valuations.
Now, Andrew, I know you're going to mention Taiwan, but is there anything in Japan you can mention?
Yeah, 2024 was a roller coaster year for Japanese equity market. Actually, 2024 started with a new scheme called NISA, Nippon Japan Individual Savings Account, a new type of tax exemption program for small investment. And what we see was that after that, Nikkei reached a record high and also its biggest drop in a single day in history due to BOJ's surprising rate hike. So amid of the volatility, there are also some good corporate action demands like 338279 with a buyer offer from its competitor's Canadian parent company and also tariff-related demand like Nissan Motor. So the corporate action names draw demand from event funds and borrowers that were traded much higher than normal GC level. Apart from Japan echoing what the Taiwan AI mania, it happens during the ETF rebalance, where we often see short demand on potential rebalance names ahead of the announcement date. It's part of the pre-positioning strategies for funds. Around the rebalance date, a temporary tightness in supply resulting in heightened fee as lending level is impacted greatly by demand and supply. And some good examples are like Nanya Tech, Citronics Tech, Supreme Electronic during the ETF rebalance. The borrow level was almost double. This increasingly popular strategy contributed to higher level in single stock lending and repo in Taiwan market.
Now, Jeff, let's dig back into those themes. Granted, this is me adding some creative salt, but how do we monetize them? Are they purely one-offs? Basically, any takeaways for our industry to be more prepared for 2025?
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Drilling deeper into Taiwan, it's such a tech-heavy market that the AI mania has spurred equity valuations higher, with the TAIEX up more than 25%, semiconductor stocks leading the way. We saw many of the tech stocks riding that AI wave where borrow demand was concentrated, hence driving up loan fees. Now, this landscape on its own would have provided ample opportunity for short sellers, but if you couple that with the lack of conviction towards Hong Kong and a continued short selling ban in Korea, it meant a lot of the attention regionally was focused on Taiwan. We also saw some lending opportunities around capital raising events as companies sought to capitalize on those high stock valuations. Will this change in 2025? Well, I don't see any sign that the AI wave is subsiding anytime soon, and I would expect conditions will prevail for Taiwan to continue to be a strong revenue driver. But given the Korean short selling ban is due to be lifted, and if further stimulus measures buoy the Hong Kong market, we can expect a little bit of the focus to move to those markets as well. If we look in the collateral space, there have been cyclical fluctuations over the past 2 or 3 years in demand to deploy those different types of Asian collateral. This year, particularly in the second half of the year, we've seen this trend grow. For example, we've seen continued growth in appetite to pledge KTBs as collateral in the region. We've also seen renewed demand in China collateral via Stock Connect, and we've seen Taiwanese equity collateral in vogue again, as well as chatter about collateral acceptance from some of the ASEAN markets, including Indonesia and Malaysia. Outside of that, there is appetite from borrowers to pledge less traditional forms of collateral, such as convertible bonds, and for those lenders or beneficial owners that are able to accept those forms of collateral within their own credit risk profiles, there's a lot of opportunity for outperformance. I would absolutely expect that trend to continue looking forward through 2025.
Now, Andrew, from the prime broker side, I assume your thoughts are similar?
Yes, I actually echo Jeff. First of all, on the Taiwan side, it's been really focused markets for us this year. The revenue driver when ASEAN markets are actually lacking a clear big theme at the moment in 2024. For Malaysia and Thailand, we are seeing demands mostly go around deal names like Top Gloves, Gulf Energy, and InTouch, for example. These are the names that which are leading the lending market. In fact, we are seeing an increasing trend of new multi-asset management funds were set up and more than 200 ETFs with total assets of more than $160 billion launched in Taiwan markets last year in 2024. With the most popular ones focusing on technology and dividend payout. So as behavioral finance suggests, who wouldn't like cash distributed by these funds, huh? And for active ETF market, which means the funds do not really track index performance, but rather manage under discrete investment mandate. The Financial Supervisory Commission, also known as FSC, expects by 2026, the market to actually reach up to $6.3 billion for active ETFs. Also, we are also seeing some short demands and potential short squeeze in foundries like 2303TT, 677TT, and 5347TT, Vanguard, for example, as investors are pessimistic on mature node of foundries.
Now, I know we cover this in almost every podcast that we do, but I'm hoping for an update. Is there any regulatory issues in Korea or Taiwan or Thailand, potentially the Bank of Japan policy and how this affects across currency trades? Any updates? Because we have clients that continuously ask for, you know, a pulse check on those markets and regulatory issues. Jeff, do you have thoughts on that?
Suffice to say, Matt, the short sell ban in Korea is due to be lifted at the end of March 2025. As I mentioned, everybody is working hard to be prepared for the reopening after what will be a 15-month hiatus. So we're all looking forward to that, and hopefully that will boost revenues across the APAC region going forwards. Regarding the Bank of Japan, in a nutshell, divergent central bank policies previously had provided significant cross-currency arbitrage opportunities. However, the BOJ took action to lift rates this year at a time of policy easing from the Fed Reserve, which caused spreads to narrow. The trade certainly hasn't gone away when we look at US Treasury versus Japanese government bonds, for example, but there may be better opportunities to deploy HQLA assets such as US Treasuries elsewhere. Again, this flips back to the advantages of collateral diversity, which can provide either better returns or open up demand outlet for those HQLA assets by accepting different types of collateral.
Now, this might sound like an empty calorie question, but I think it's actually rather tricky for our industry. We all know that the US recently went to T1 settlement, and I'm sure that all the global markets are anxious to follow. So, Jeff, how much of a problem will that be for APAC in general, specifically Hong Kong and Taiwan?
Looking at the US market, Matt, the transition to T+1 has gone relatively smooth. Hence, there's been a lot of chatter across the APAC markets. I believe that Australia, Hong Kong, and Taiwan have done consultations, or at least started consultations, and no doubt we'll see T+1 introduced at some point in the future in these markets and others going forwards. However, some markets are going to have more challenging operational structures than the more liquid markets, and there will be challenges such as limited number of settlement batches or pre-funding requirements, and those markets that have those challenging operational structures will have to undergo market reforms before T+1 can be introduced. Of course, as an industry, we hope we can work with the various regulators and exchanges to ensure the changes are workable.
Now, Andrew, from the prime broker side, I assume you're seeing the same issues as Jeff at Northern Trust on the lending side?
I would say the benefits more than the downside, but traditionally more short sellers would borrow securities on the trade day of the sale due to the short selling regulations in Taiwan, for example. With a short-term settlement life cycle for buy and sell, they could actually return the stock back to the lender sooner. So it could also be a double-edged sword. However, borrowers may find recourse become more difficult to cover as less time is given. Also, it would also need more streamlined operational process for matching and settlement to support this. In the long term, however, I would say the market can benefit from reduced borrow cost, and this should hopefully promote trading and short-selling turnover. So it's great to me.
Now, for the moneymaker question, what does 2025 have in store for us here in APAC? And as most people know, volatility is our friend in the securities finance world. Any number of issues can cause volatility. Geopolitical tensions, ever-changing regulatory issues, potentially G10 debt issues. Now, I know finance. I've worked here for 20 years. You're a peacock today and a feather duster tomorrow. So I'm not asking you to predict the future. But Jeff, Andrew, anything we should be aware of for 2025?
I could kick that one off, Matt. Geopolitics will probably play a part in shaping regional activity in 2025, but I'm going to be very unoriginal here and a bit like a sports pundit, predicting that the current champions will be the champions again next year. I don't see any sign of AI wave abating, so I think Taiwan is going to be a very strong market next year, perhaps the number one market in APAC again. But of course, as I mentioned before, we've got Korea reopening to look forward to and potentially Hong Kong bouncing back as a major market, a major revenue contributing market in APAC. So I'm keen to see how those markets will fare next year. I think we can only be surprised to the upside. The Korea, probably there will be a slow start as market participants feel their way back in and make sure the systems are working as expected. But hopefully that will be almost a whole new tranche of revenue generation for anybody participating in the market.
Just to add a few more points. So 2024 was proven to be an eventful year with the Trump presidency and all the rest of the crypto mania and all these. And 2025 would be even more to look forward to in lending markets, I would suppose. I hate to say, but geopolitical tension and potential trade war 2.0 between the two biggest economies will undoubtedly to be the key factors for the year. We should see how the China government will react on any new fiscal or monetary policy with President Trump in the White House again after 4 years. We should also keep an eye on a discussion on emerging SBL markets such as India or Philippines as they open up new playing field for short sellers and new revenue streams. On the funding side, Basel III Endgame first phase will be effective on July 1st, 2025. To banks, it will mean roughly about 5 to 10% increase of capital consumption from the existing Basel III framework. This will inevitably impact profitability of certain existing trades, and trades with low return on RWA will first fade out. As we are going into Basel III endgame and eventually Basel IV, banks will need to be smarter around managing RWA-heavy capital to cope with ever-changing landscape. Lastly, the booming cryptocurrency market will likely continue to trigger interesting demand on proxy names like MicroStrategy in the US or Meitu earlier in Hong Kong.
Now, Cam, one last point. Regarding 2025, any takeaway nuggets from Equilend's side of the street, maybe potentially opening up new markets in APAC in 2025?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I don't want to parrot everything that Jeff and Andrew have just said, but from our perspective, we agree we don't see the AI mania going away anytime soon. So, you know, concerns over the potential AI bubble and geopolitical tensions will persist. And as Taiwan being the hub of semiconductor production will certainly still play a role. And it'll be interesting to see two points actually as to A, how does protectionism coming in from the Trump presidency play out in region? And secondly, it'll be interesting also to see the role of Japan and how they play a potential role in hedging against Taiwanese dominance in the semiconductors market. And then just to add on the Korea debate there, again, I looked at the second half of 2021, where we saw the post-COVID short sell bans being lifted for Korea. And we saw a rebound in revenue there by nearly 230% for the Korean market. So on one hand, you have the issue of participants being cautious re-entering the market, but on the other, there could be more possibility, or I should say more opportunity, in the sense that there is no list of securities. It's the whole exchange now that's subject to short sell. So then from our perspective, we do see, you know, Indonesia opening up next year. Will there be a lot of activity? I can't possibly say that. All I can say is we see Malaysia and we see Thailand opening up, and there hasn't been huge amounts of activity in those markets. I can't predict what Indonesia will be like.
As always, gentlemen, thank you for your time, your knowledge, and your participation. Thanks again. For more on the key themes impacting our industry in 2025, join us at our annual PASLA conference in Macau on February 26th and 27th. The agenda is now online and early bird registration is open until January 24th. We recommend booking early. That's it for this episode of Asia Securities Finance Monthly. I'm Matt MacArthur in Hong Kong. We'll see you next time.
This podcast is exclusively sponsored by Equilend, a global fintech firm for the securities finance industry.